I try to remember being the kid that sat in the pews and remembering many times things would go right over my head that was being taught or shared from this position. And let's just say I like to keep things as simple as possible, because if you don't understand them, you can't apply them, what good is it? So there are times, many times, that we need to dig really, really deep. But there are some things that I had the privilege of growing up in church to where I would hear stories over and over again. And those stories still come back to me today. So back in the old days, when I was a kid, we did have, I think we talked about this within the last few weeks, we had these boards that would be set up. I think maybe they were this big, and they were two panels, and they would open up, and it looked a little bit like a light blue background. And there were these pieces of cloth called, well, it was flannel graph, right? That's what it was called. And you had different images for whatever that character is that you were studying, and that person speaking would put those up on the board. Why did they do that? Well, they did it because it mattered. It mattered to the younger eyes that were out there that were trying to stay engaged and trying to not be distracted by something else. So I didn't do flannel graph, but I wanted to choose something that was rather simple. There's two women in the scriptures that books of the Bible are named after. I would like the very last row back there, the young ladies back there, tell me those two women's names. Thank you. One person did it all. All right. So, that is true. That is true. Let's do this. Let's go to neither one of those yet. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 3. And I'm going to read right up front here. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. We're talking about America, aren't we? Aren't we talking about America? Aren't we talking about our society? Oh, there's more. Without natural affection. Yep, check, we got that one. Truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent. Do you know what? I'd looked at this, and I see the word incontinent, and I'm reading, of course, from the King James, and I think about that person that can't control their ability to go to the restroom, their ability to do their business at the right time, at the right place. And you might think, well, that's kind of crude to be talking about right now, but the word's in there, and that's what incontinent means today in our society. But what this really means is that the people can't control themselves overall. That's what it really means. They are so deep into their sin, they can't control themselves. They're out of control. Fierce. They're out of control in a vicious way. Despisers of those that are good. Folks, it's amazing. Turn on the TV if you dare. Catch some news somewhere and check. We got them all. You can find this out if you watch TV for a brief amount of time. As it goes on, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. You know what? Let's go back to that. Having a form of godliness, I think this is even clear enough that I can get it. It's simple. He's talking about those who call themselves believers in God. That's who he's talking about. Not necessarily that they are believers. I think it includes those that are, but those who claim to be. I would call them what my wife has called them, cultural Christians. It's just because you grew up around it in your culture. Doesn't necessarily mean you have that personal relationship with Christ. So I'll read that again. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For of this sort are they which creep into houses and leave captive silly women laden with sins, led away with divers lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth. You're smart, but you miss the truth. That's what that's saying. You may know a lot. You may be well regarded, but you still miss the most important truth above all. Now, as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also that resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds reprobate concerning the faith, but they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men as theirs also was. That's the bad, right? It's definitively bad. This is almost like reading, Proverbs. You got this contrast. Okay, here's the bad. That's laid out, right? We got the bad. Now, the plan to do good. But thou hast fully known my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, persecutions, afflictions, which came unto me at Antioch, at Iconium, at Lystra. What persecutions I endured, but out of them all the Lord delivered me. Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. That's a promise we really didn't want. Right? Hey, do the right thing. It's still going to hurt. Hey, do the right thing. It's actually going to hurt more. That's a promise. It is a promise. Not necessarily what we wanted. But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. But continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them. And that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly finished unto all good works. I charge thee therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. We're there. Right? We're there. But after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. But watch thou in all things. Endure afflictions. We're getting the whole list of what to do about this, right? We're getting the whole list. Do the work of the evangelist. Make full proof of thy ministry. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. We got the bad, right? It's a very specific list, yet it covers everything. Then we've got what to do. But then we've got the payout. What is my return on my investment? ROI, that's an important term in my world of business. What's my return on my investment? I'm going to go through all this garbage, all this stuff that I just don't want to face. But what's my return for going through all of it? What do I get back? Why is it worth it? It's hard to grasp that when we look at this life and we think back, the older we get, we can always think back to different points in our childhood. And there's parts of us that are glad we've experienced the things we have. Then there's things that we wish we didn't experience. But we look back and go, wow, okay, and here I am this far through my life. Whatever point you're at. And then you get closer to situations to where you see somebody that's lived a long life. My father is 83 years old. Dementia is there. The mind's not working exactly right. But there's a lot of guards that drop down. A lot of social guards. Things that somebody says that has dementia that you kind of wish those guards were still there. You learn things you don't want to know necessarily and regrets, but also victories. And you look at all of that stuff and you see life ends on this earth. How hard is it for us to grasp that time beyond the grave? How hard is that? It's very hard. We've seen examples of taking that rope that has that little dot on it, and that rope might be, I don't know, 100 foot long, could reach from here to the end of that hallway. And you have a tough time finding that little dot that's on there. And maybe that barely represents what our lifetime on this earth is like compared to eternity. Our return on our investments is eternity with Christ. That's what our return on our investment is. Why do I spend so much time talking about it? It's because I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to grasp it myself. I like what I studied this week, especially because I wanted to keep it simple for me. If it was simple for me, it'd be simple for the younger people in here. My reading comprehension is slow. There are people in here that read very well. My wife being one of them. Several of my kids, great comprehension. Then you get to me, uh-oh. Wow, this is slow. Why do I have to reread that? I didn't get that. Mine went somewhere else. Okay, I'm slow with reading comprehension. So what? That's who I am. That's fine. I'm going to encourage you in this way, a thought that came to me this week. If you struggle, and look, the King James can be hard to read sometimes. It can be. I'm going to encourage you to think it through this way. Keep reading it. Just keep reading it. You miss a part, so what? There's so much in there that's simple that we can get. And if we spend our time applying what we know we can read and we can understand, that's fine. The complex stuff will come another time. But we have enough here that's simple for us, that's undeniable, that we can focus in on that will keep us busy as believers. Just keep reading it. How many accidents are there in the Bible? Let's think about it. All the stories. How many accidents are there? Real accidents. Well, right. Well, what's that? So it's a trick question, and I always despise it when people did that to me. But it is a trick question. Each those two things that you noted, the axe head coming off, right?
There's so many stories in the Bible we can't keep up. you cited the person that went to balance the Ark of the Covenant. Is that what you're talking about? And they died because they touched it. They shouldn't have touched it. So when you look at those and you see their accidents, but every one of those, everything in the scriptures, they really weren't accidents, were they? Because there was a miracle to follow about the axe head coming off. There were miracles to follow. There was a precedent set or a reminder for everybody. The rules are still the rules. God is still absolute. Don't touch the Ark of the Covenant. Even with good intentions, don't do it. God is absolute. So they weren't accidents. They were opportunities that God allowed or God engineered. So I am building up to something. God is never surprised, is he? God always has a plan. You ever been around a person that's like, you know what, we're going to ask him or we're going to ask her because they've always got a plan. They've always got a plan. They've always got this together. They're thinking ahead 2, 3, 4, 5 steps. They're always thinking ahead. That's God, though. God's always thinking ahead. He's always got a plan. We just need to follow him because he knows what he's doing. We don't have to understand what he's doing. We just have to follow. What determines beauty? What's beautiful? Okay, here I am as a guy. Growing up, I see pretty girls. I think I know what beautiful is. As a teenager, I had, I don't know if I'd call it a girlfriend, but anyways, let's just say girlfriend. And I know the ladies on the back row are going, don't go there, don't say it. But I had a girlfriend that she was beautiful. She was actually in a pageant. There was a state pageant she won, and she was going to a national competition. And she was, yeah, beautiful. And the more I hung around her, because I was friends with her brother, but the more I was around their house and I hung around, and we actually went to the beach with her family. I went to the beach with her family, and we did all this time. And you know what happened? She got ugly. You're laughing because you know what I mean. You've met somebody that you thought was really attractive and really somebody that, wow, what a striking looking person. But then when you look deeper, you find out, not so much. Not so desirable. But you know what? Something else is true. How many of you have met people that, okay, they like this other person, they have an interest in this person, it's mild, but then it grows into something really strong and really beautiful. And that person may just be an okay-looking person, but then once they start to get to know each other, they realize the beauty just grows and grows because of who that person truly is. My wife is so happy I didn't go any further with that. Okay. She always looks nervous when I start to do things. She's like, don't do it, don't do it. All right. You know, the sad thing is about that person claimed to know Christ. That person, that girl that was a girlfriend, I should say, she claimed to know Christ. It's sad. I don't know where she is today, but I do know she's got multiple failures in marriage. She has multiple marriages. I don't know where she's at. I don't know. It's sad. It's just sad. And I also thank God that he was able to give me my immature, my irresponsible ways. He was still able to give me the eyes to say, you don't want this relationship. Be grateful when God shuts a door. So I'm thinking of beauty. Who is a woman that we think of as being beautiful in the scriptures? Exactly, Esther.
Let's think about Esther. Esther had, I'm going to use the word entitled. She was entitled. She had the right to be angry and bitter. Think about it. She was ripped away from her home. Mom was dead. Dad was dead. Okay, that's a total ripoff, isn't it? Mom and dad are gone. She's an orphan. And then she has an uncle that adopts her, but she's still lost a lot. It doesn't say an aunt, an uncle, just an uncle. Don't know about an aunt. Don't know if she had a lady to help guide her with some things that a mom figure would do. She was poor, obviously being a slave. She was a Jew. The Jews have been terrorized throughout history. Wow, you just keep reading. Terrorized, terrorized, terrorized. She kept it a secret she was a Jew. Here's something that you might say, hey, this is a good thing, but maybe she felt it was a bad thing. She was pretty. She was attractive. Maybe she didn't want to draw attention. Maybe she just wanted to lay low and just survive. Maybe that's what she wanted to do. If she lived in America today, she would be a perfect victim. So many people want to be victims, and they haven't even achieved these horrible things, not that you would try to achieve them. But here it is, she's a victim. She doesn't want to be, but it's what she's got. So, you know, when you look at Esther, it's a short book. It's my kind of book. It's my kind of book. You can read through it in one sitting, and it's easy to follow, and it's very interesting. So the book begins with the king of Persia, world power. Now think about this. This guy was a major, major player. He had power from India all the way to Ethiopia, two continents, and a lot of countries in between. I think it was like 170 provinces or whatever they called them. But he was the man. He was over all of this stuff. Powerful, powerful guy. So he throws this huge party. Now, think about this. He threw a huge party because he had a bad run for a while. And a bad run because he actually lost some wars and battles and things like that. So he's feeling kind of down. So he's like, let's throw a party. So he threw a party, huge party. These banners everywhere of beautiful fabrics and colors. Think about it, back in those days, there wasn't a whole lot of color around. So when there was color, like this bright blue banner of fabric and these scarlet red fabrics and beautiful pure white ones, all of this stuff was striking to the eyes. And then you had food. What's a party without food, right? So you had food, and what happened was these people all come, and the way they did it was kind of segregated. For the most part, you had the guys doing their thing in the guy side of the palace, right? And then you had the ladies doing their thing, and the queen's throwing, you know, her party over there. And so what happens, the guy gets drunk. This is yet another example of bad things happen when you drink alcohol. I'm just going to have to say it. You know, it's look for good examples. You're going to spend a lot of time doing so. So here it is. He gets drunk. He gets full of himself. He's with his buddies talking smack and like, you ought to see the queen. Now, not everybody could see the queen all the time. They really couldn't. So what happened was, he's like, you know what? She's beautiful. You guys will be jealous. She is beautiful. Vashti. He sends the word to her. Doesn't text her, doesn't call her. Sends the chamberlain over to her. Says, hey, you got to come over, queen, because the king called you. And you only went to the king if you were called. Even the queen didn't just go, because if the queen went without an invitation, yeah, that'd be a dead queen, okay? Careful. Anybody. But even the queen. So the queen went over, and she was told to go over, and she's like, no. I'm not going. Now, I can't blame her because she's thinking, what a drunk idiot.
The guy is doing this garbage, and he's running his mouth, and I have to go and be his little trophy? I get it. She didn't want to do it. Okay, well, if you ever dealt with a drunk person, try not to provoke them. It doesn't go well. So what happens is she refused, and when she went over, or when she refused to go over, then all of a sudden, fast forward, what happens? He gets mad. He wants to send the example of, hey, I'm still the man, I'm still the king, and I'm going to show every man and every woman in my kingdom what happens. Boom, she's no longer queen. Now, surprising, he didn't kill her. But I think either way, it was devastating, and it sent a message. This guy is mean. He's harsh. Even when he has poor judgment, being drunk, it doesn't matter. He's still the king. There are so many messages we could spend time on right here in this. There is authority. God puts it in place. It's still the authority. I can't blame her. She's tired of it. She's fed up with it, but she held her ground, and it cost her. All right, so that sets the stage. None of this is an accident, is it? So it sets the stage for what God has planned here. There's a queen search now. Now, the queen search, you would look at it, and possibly as we've seen movies maybe, and we've seen cartoons or whatever, and it's the search for the queen, and everybody's excited. I don't know if they'd be excited to get married to the drunk guy. So it's still a search. So what happens is the king sends out all of his people for this search. So let's just look at something. Let's go to Esther, chapter 2. So he just offloaded the queen, Vashti. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. After these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he felt good about his decision. He sent the message to everybody. He's the man. He's in control. He's the king. He remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Uh-oh, I got rid of my queen. Yeah, okay, that's true. Now I don't have a queen. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him. All right, now listen. Let's think about this. Be careful who you surround yourself with as advisors. Oh, the scriptures are full of these guys that surround themselves with bad advisors, poor counsel. Oh, we've got a list of them that could go on and on and on. And they get in trouble. They really do. Let there, his advisor said, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. Hey, let's start a new collection of women. That's what that means. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom that they may gather together all the fair young virgins of Shushan, the palace, unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of the women under the custody of Haig, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti, and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Is there any phrase in here that bugs you? What phrase in those verses just stood out to you and that really you didn't like? Anybody? Keeper of the women. Keeper of the women. Ah! Ah! He's talking about starting a new collection of women as property. Wow. Anyways, we'll move on to the next thing. You know what? Think about this. Why didn't the women refuse? Maybe some did refuse. It doesn't really say in here. Let's go to chapter 2 still. Let's go to verse 15. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house, royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So much for laying low. Now she's queen. She's high profile. Guess what they don't know about her? Say it out loud. She's a Jew. Is that a problem? That's a problem. So now she's tied to the most violent, most powerful person as far as anybody can even think about in their known world. Here's what Mordecai did, her uncle. Man, he is worried about her a lot. He's really worried about her. What does he do? He hangs out close to the palace. So there's gates there. Why does he do it? He hangs out to be ready, I believe, to be ready to help out Esther. Now, while he was hanging out, he overheard two of the king's men planning to do harm to the king. Mordecai, listening to this stuff, they just think he's an old guy, not paying attention to him, and these guys are just running their mouth. But he's listening. So Mordecai sent a message through the right people to get to Esther. Esther turned around and told the king. Guys, is any of this an accident? None of it's an accident. The king finds out these guys, done, gone, dead. Now, they did check it out. They made sure, okay, this is really what they've been saying. They're gone. They were hanged. Right after that, Haman, here's your new character here. Haman then became boss over the princes and the servants. He hated what group? He was an Agagite, if I said that correctly. And that group hated the Jews on a special new level. And he thought, you know what? I'm going to gain favor with the king. I'm going to get license from the king. And I'm going to get funding from the king to do these people in. So I'm not only going to enjoy doing these people in, I'm going to get paid for it, and I'm going to be well regarded, because what he did, Haman went in and told him, hey, these people hate you, and they're undermining you, and they disobey your laws. And the king, he fell for it, boom, real quick. That's why Haman got that ring that gave him the king's authority. That ring matters, guys. When you write back in those days and you write it on the paper and you roll it up, they melt wax on it and they impress into it the king's ring, the authority ring. And when that happens, that is the law. That's the way that worked. So he had the ring because the king gave it to him. He had the money. He had everything he needed to do to accomplish his wicked, wicked ways. So he goes home and he brags to his wife and his friends, guess who I am? Guess what I got? I'm the man under the king. Let's go to Esther chapter 4. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes. Now rent, he didn't go pay somebody so he can have clothes to wear. He didn't rent them in that way. He ripped them up. That's what that means. He shredded them and put on sackcloth with ashes. Have you ever had ashes on you? You're a mess. You're dirty. You got ashes all over you. You look filthy. You look horrible. What are you doing in that case? You're drawing attention to yourself. You're saying, I am so upset about something that I am going to publicly express how badly I'm hurting. Once he put on the sackcloth with ashes, he went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. Not where you need to be. Don't mess up the gate area. It's supposed to be pristine, perfect, look like Disney World, right? So it's supposed to be nice. Get your dirty self away from here. That was the attitude there. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. Now the way that they take that, Haman interprets it and tells the king, hey, these people are protesting against you. This gives all the more fuel for the king to say, kill them all. Now, what happened was, Esther's maids, they're coming in and out of the gate, right? Going to work to the palace. And they told her. They said, hey, this is what's happened. Now, they might have figured out she's a Jew, but they're keeping it on the down low. But they know Mordecai is really important to her. She was grieved. So what she did was she sent clothes, fresh clothes, not the ones that were torn up. Said, clean up. And what happened was Mordecai said, I'm not cleaning up. This is important. I'm not backing down. Her point, Esther's point, was this lay low thing, what happened to that? You're going to get us all killed. And he's going, no. We're already on the track to be killed. This is already set. You need to take this serious. I wonder, too, if once she was in there, she was like, I'm safe. I'm on the inside. I'm not under the gun or I'm not under threat by being out there because now I'm on the inside. I'm queen. Things are, you know, they could be worse. So maybe they're okay now. Can you imagine any of us in that position to where we start thinking, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Let's not rock the boat here. You know what? Mordecai turned around and he told her, even though he respected the queen and the throne and the authority there, he respected the queen. He pushed back and he said, in essence, through the chamberlain, through the maids, he sent a message and said, this is your time. This is why you've been put here. This is the time to step up and stand up. Do not cower back. Do not cover this over with new clothes and a bath. This is the time. Is it an accident she was there? No. Does she have a purpose where she's at? She does. Here, let's go to Esther 4:13 through 17. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. He's letting her know, just because you think you're safe, you're not. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace, if you keep your mouth shut at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. That's pretty straightforward.
And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for a time such as this? He's saying, no accident, young lady. You are here for a purpose. God has arranged everything. You know, when Haman went in and out of the gate, the king's gate, he got angry every time. You know why? Because Mordecai was there. Even before Mordecai was, it shredded his clothes and he had ash all over him. Even before that, you know what made Haman so angry? Mordecai would be the one that would sit there or stand there and go, not bowing to you. Everybody else is bowing to him and saying great things to him. And Mordecai, he stood there and said no. Made Haman so mad. And it fueled Haman's anger. Not that it needed much more fuel. So, just to give you a little connection there of why he especially, Haman's number one target was Mordecai. Because he wanted to show, you better respect me or it's going to cost you. Chapter 5. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel. She's putting on her finest, right? And stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. Now, think about it. She didn't want to do this. She was afraid to do it. She was afraid to do it because you show up without the invitation from the king, you're dead. One exception. The king held the gold scepter. And that gold scepter, if he was okay with you making that risk, which few did, he would put it forward. And if it came forward, he's going to listen to you. He's not going to kill you on the spot or have you hauled out and killed. So she goes in with great risk. And she already saw what he did to the previous queen, right? The guy's got a history. You better believe him. You better respect the law. Because that was law. That wasn't just the way he did things. And it was so, when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said to the king unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? And what is thy request? It shall be given thee to half of the kingdom. Wow. Okay. He's really smitten with her big time, right? Amazing. She must have been one amazing looking girl. Amazing. But I think it went beyond that. I think it was her humility, her graciousness. I think there's some people that I've met that they have kind of a glow about them. As strange as it sounds, a person that just loves the Lord on an extraordinary level, that there's something about them that you just can't quite articulate and describe what it is. But that person that has that glow, I've met several. Maybe you have too. I think she may have had that. Something so extraordinary, so desirable, so beautiful. So she's at risk here, but now she's past the risk. Now the king is saying, you got it. You can have half the kingdom. Just ask. That's a pretty good start, isn't it? So what she asked for, you know what I passed right over? I passed right over this. I'm sorry. Let's go back. Esther 4. I passed right over this. I didn't finish it. Let's go to verse 13. Then Mordecai, verse 13. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews." We read that. "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art to come or art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" I should have kept reading, because here's the deal. There was a turning point. There was a trigger. There was that time, and I've experienced this myself, not in a deadly situation, but there was a time for myself like this that I could think of, and that is, instead of the cowering mode that she was in, trying to lay low, cowering, she realized, this is it. Step up, and now go to action. What are you going to do about it? She became resolved. Look at verse 15. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. She starts giving commands, doesn't she? She's starting to take control, isn't she? Verse 16, "Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish." That's a person that's resolved, isn't it? That's a person that says, "I get it. This is my time. Time to step up." There's no cowering. There's no stepping back. There's no boo-hoo. I'm the victim. None of it. It's gone. She's moving forward, isn't she? And she's going forward, and she's so resolved that she says, "I know I might die." But she does it anyways. So I kind of messed up the punchline, because I read the next part to where she goes in and the king accepts her. But he doesn't just accept her. He accepts her and he's going to give her half the kingdom, he says. Now, what would you have done? He's like, "Yeah, I'll take that." I think maybe I would have. So what Esther said, let's just jump over here back to chapter 5. It all went well. And what she basically said was, "I would like," she didn't say half the kingdom, she said, "I would like for to create this banquet, and then for the king and Haman to come to the banquet the next day." Now, the king says, "Yeah, I can do that, no big deal." And she said, "Then I'll tell you what I want." The king says, "Hey, I can wait a day, no big deal." So he does. He's going to eat well too. And so what happens, he sends word to Haman, "Hey, you're coming the next day." "Yes, sir." Haman's going to be there. Haman, in the meantime, guess what he's building? He's building gallows. Do you know what gallows are? They're big devices that you hang a rope off of that hang people, put ropes around their neck, and when these people no longer have something to stand on, then what it does, it either breaks their neck or it chokes them to where they no longer have air that can get to them, and they're dead. And it's a very public way to show that that person that had them executed has a lot of power in order to do it. He didn't build this little gallows. It was 10 cubits, and I don't know how high 10 cubits would be, but it's high enough that it's above all the crowds to where the crowds can see it. So he wanted to make a show of it. So he's having those things built, and he's like, "Hey, man, things are rolling for me. I am doing great. King's ring, see it, see it? And I've got the power, I got the money, I get to kill this whole group I hate, and I'm going to start with Mordecai. He is going to be swinging from the gallows." So that night, what happens, the king can't sleep. He can't sleep. Accident?
Coincidence? No. Nor was it an accident or coincidence that the king said, hey, since I can't sleep, I'll watch TV. No, he didn't do that. Or I'll go Google search something. No. He said, I want you guys to read what's been happening in the kingdom. Okay. So it's like, read the newspaper. You guys don't even know what that is. All right. So what happens is he's reading, these guys are reading through, and what do they get to? They get to the event of this guy that's just a citizen that got word to the queen somehow, doesn't know the connection to the queen, that these two guys at his gate, two of his people that he employed, were trying to do him some harm. I don't know, kill him, whatever, do him some harm. So he had those guys killed, and he's going, yeah, I remember that. Whatever happened to Mordecai? What did we do for him? Well, sir, we didn't do anything. We killed those two guys. Yeah, but what did we do for Mordecai? Nothing. We need to take care of Mordecai. He saved the king's life. Accidents? Timing? Coincidence? No, none of it. Everything is God engineered, God allowed. So here it is. The next day, let's go to chapter 6. This is such the setup. This is the end of the movie that has the big ending, because Haman comes in on. He comes in, and of course, we just read about Haman the king. I'll just read it anyways. Chapter 6. On that night, could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king, and it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? And then the king's servant said that ministered unto them, there is nothing done for him. And the king said, who is in the court? Who's out there? Now Haman was come in to the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king, to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. This is all happening at the same time, guys. So I imagine Haman was excited. He's like, I'm getting up early. I get to hang Mordecai. The king was already up. Hey, who's out there in the court? All this is happening at the same time. And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Did he say which man? He didn't. Oh, what a setup. I don't even think the king meant to set him up. It doesn't sound like. Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom the king delight to do honor more than himself. Right? Hey, he's liking me. He's wanting to step it up. And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought, which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal, which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thou shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Thinking all along, he is setting himself up. He was set up, though. Then the king said to Haman, okay, make haste, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai. Oh, what a surprise. Do you think God laughs? Do you think God can be entertained? I think he can. I think he can. Make haste and take the apparel, the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Yeah, the one that will not acknowledge you and will not bow to you. Yep, that one. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Man, he went out. He went the max. He went everything, thinking it was for himself when it was for his enemy. Isn't this a picture of what God has planned for us? When it feels like the enemy is winning. Because there are times the enemy's winning. But in the big picture, in the end, who wins? The believer. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai. Wouldn't you have loved to see that on live streaming video? Wouldn't you have loved to see that? And brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighted to honor." And Mordecai came again to the king's gate. But Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. Now get this. Here's a prophecy. And it came from Haman's wife. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, "If Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him." Ouch. And while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains and hasted to bring Haman unto the banquet that Esther had prepared. Oh yeah, that appointment. Uh-oh. So the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen, and the king said unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, "What is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to the half of the kingdom." Then Esther the queen answered and said, "If I found favor in thy sight, O king, and if I please the king, let my life be given to me at my petition and my people at my request." That's the big one right there. He doesn't even know who her people are. "For we are sold." Now he's starting to understand. "I and my people to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage." Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, "Who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so?" Who's doing this damage to your people? The king's still not put all this together yet. And Esther said, "The adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman." And I love this next part. Then Haman was afraid. You ought to be before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, uh-oh, God will use his wrath, this evil guy's wrath, to his own favor as well, went into the palace of the palace garden, and Haman stood up to make requests for his life. Let's fast forward. Who was the first to be hanged on the gallows? Haman. That's right. That's right. God's in control, folks. Esther had a beauty that was a light in a very dark world. She had something super special. She had every reason to be a victim and whine and complain and say, "My life has been terrible." She didn't take that role, did she? She was still scared. She's human. But when she was finally called to step up, she did it. She had the heart of God's desires. And it's the heart that God desires for us to have. She refused to see accidents, but instead she saw God's providences. I still think about this. There was a tipping point for her, wasn't there? To going from, okay, I'm just going to kind of lay low. And And I really don't want to do that. That's scary or that's dangerous. Or, and she hit that tipping point, and then she just jumped right over it and said, now I'm going to go forward. Is there something in your life that you're afraid of? That you say, I know what's right to do, but I'm afraid to do it. It's a high risk, but I know it's right. I know God approves of this. I know it's God ordained. Do it and pursue that goal. Charge after that goal. Let's think about it. She did three things. She chose a teachable heart, right? Three things. She chose a teachable heart all the way through the scriptures. We can see that was a choice she made. She had to make it over and over and over. What would I have done? I don't know. I may have played the victim role. She didn't. She chose to hear God. Having a teachable heart is not just saying, I'm open, but actually pursuing what the truth is. Digging in. What are the resources God gives? What resources did she have? She had to listen. She could listen to those around her that she knew were teaching God's word. We have it written. We can pull it up on our devices. How hard is it for us to pursue? It's not. Two, the second thing she did, she prayed. And she told others to pray and fast for her, right? I mean, this girl went into total leadership mode. John R. Rice said, every failure in life is a prayer failure. She prayed and asked for prayer. You know what? I was thinking about this. Here's a victim, per se. In our society, she would be. But you know what? She kept on going. And I lost my mother, personally, my mother, a lot of you remember, a year ago, this month. And I mean, that's my mom. And there's still times that I find things that will remind me of her, and I'll just burst into tears, like a big baby. But you know what? That was my mom. I can do that. As I was reading this, I realized here she was, Esther was in this prayer mode, right? And she was telling other people to pray, and she was pushing it, commanding it. This is what's going to happen. My mom was not necessarily a leader or a strong person, but I can tell you what she was. She's a prayer warrior. She wrote everything down. Oh, way too much stuff. But she never got rid of it. So we had to go through it. But there were some really cool things we went through in her Bible. Just the notes in there, the people she's praying for over and over and over again. What did I lose a year ago? I lost my mom. I'll see her again. But I lost a prayer warrior. Because prayer moves the arm of the Almighty. Number three, the third thing she did. So she chose to have a teachable heart. Two, she prayed and made sure others prayed and fasted. Third, she chose a sacrificial heart. That's different than having a teachable heart. That only comes after you've had a teachable heart. David Gibbs of Christian Law Association tells of a story of when he was in China, one of the times he was in China, and he saw these, he had these three Chinese guys come up to him, and they said, Pastor, will you pray for us? And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll pray for you. But he wanted to know what it was. And they said, will you pray for us? Because in our, where we live, if we are caught witnessing to others, to anybody, that they will cut our hands off. So will you pray for us that we will be okay with our hands being cut off? Wow. Now see, as I was hearing this story, I was thinking, wait a minute, Pray for us that our hands don't get cut off. It's a different heart. It's a different heart. And he said, well, how often does this happen? Are there people in your church that have no hands? And he said, oh, yes, sir, lots of them. He said, I'll pray. And they said, well, Dr. Gibbs, another thing is, if you're caught a second time, what they do is they cut your tongue out. David Gibbs said, are there people in your church with their tongues cut out? Yes, sir. They still witness. Pretty powerful. Three things she did. She chose. It's an action, folks. She chose to have a teachable heart. She did it over and over and over again. It's a repeatable action. Number two, she prayed, fasted, and had others to pray and fast. It's an action. Number three, she chose over and over again to have a sacrificial heart. Be ready to sacrifice whatever you had to sacrifice. Remember, she said, if I die, I die. She was okay with that once she made the choice to have the sacrificial heart.